Settled in Capernaum, a lakeside town on the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali. In this way, the prophecy of Isaiah was to be fulfilled. Land of Zebulun, land of Naphtali, way of the sea on the far side of Jordan, Galilee of the nations. The people that lived in darkness have seen a great light. On those who dwell in the land and shadow of death, a light has dawned. From that moment, Jesus began his preaching with the message, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is close at hand." As he was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were making a cast in the length of their net, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And they left their nets at once and followed him. Going on from there, he saw another pair of brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in their boat, their father Zebedee, mending their nets. And he called. At once leaving the boat and their father, they followed him. He went round the whole of Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and curing all kinds of disease and sickness among the people. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's my personal belief about humanity that we are never going to be happy human beings, unless there is in our lives the quality of joy. Happiness is not enough for us. Contentment is what we're made for. And contentment has about it something that lulls us to sleep. And it's only a matter of time before we awaken to the need for something more. And so if that's true, if only joy is enough for us, we want to know what the chances are of finding it and experiencing it. We get a few glimpses and windows into it over a lifetime. And these come to us as a sudden experience of light. They're most precious moments. They're what we call our best moments, our treasured moments, our memories sometimes. Moments when the beauty of the world suddenly transfixed us and lifted our hearts. Moments when the love of another person broke through the shells of indifference, which rests so often over our experience of the world. Moments of personal joy, when our own health and happiness flowed like a river, and we got a selfless and generous glimpse of the underlying kindness of God. And these things tend to be transient, passing things. Sometimes we have the fortune of making big decisions in those moments. And what we do then sets our life on a generous course. Sometimes these things burn out and disappear, leaving us with just a memory. And memory can become faded and etiolated by time until it no longer has the power to lift us. And all of us know that if we took the risk and let the whole life of the world flow into us, we don't know what the sum total of it would be. Would it be a sense of myriad-fold joy bursting spontaneously from the creation? Or would it be a kind of titanic grief that would floor us completely and make our skies dark? We know that half the world is hungry, and a quarter of it is starving. We know that there is unfairness and injustice and pain, persecution, violence, crime, depression, mental illness, all kinds of slavery in the world. And we're frightened of it. And we have the urge to keep our heads down. And so we come to a deal about this great question about joy, that we will sacrifice the possibility of joy in exchange for any kind of contentment. We will make do with the way the world is. And that is really making a friend of death. Because it's not what we're made for. And I think that those deals, those patch-up plumbing deals, characterize our modern life. In most departments, they lie behind all the malaises and pathologies of our life. And I think that if we come to the gospel on Sunday faithfully, we find these moments where the voice of Christ calls us out of this compromising with despair, this admixture of evil, which takes away our life from us. And he calls us out of it and announces the possibility of joy. And I think that in the following of these first apostles, we find that he has hooked them with this sense that the ultimate truth about the world is joyful. Nothing else explains the way in which they set out. Leaving it all behind, leaving the props of their life, the staff of life, their trade, their nets, and the boats. Leaving behind the relationships, leaving their father. They come and follow him. There's something nuptial about it. My way of being. The words of Genesis. Leaving father and mother. And they go with him. And we must go with him too. To test out the truth of his promise to us. And to find out if we can trust the God who made this creation. I read the words of Isaiah today with great consolation. Zebulun and Naphtali, the Galilee of the nations, great crossroads in the north. Not the smooth and homogeneous world of Jerusalem, which was so Jewish, where the temple courts were guarded from any Roman influence, and where the heart of Israel still beat, and gathered around it those who wanted to conceal from themselves the awful truth of the Roman and the pagans, and all that inflicted their religious sense, all that offended them. That cloistered calm was not where Jesus went. He went to the place which had been infested with Gentile ways, where the great caravans of the empire crossed and recrossed, bringing with them every kind of flotsam and jetsam from the way the world was. And there he announced a light shining. Not a reflected light. I think of Paul's impatience with his converts in Corinth. What's all these factions about? I am for Paul, I am for Apollos. It's Christ who is the light. Christ is the only light. And there's the theme of the apostles again. Leaving everything else, they followed him. And Christ is the light that really shines. And he shines in the dark. The dark that could not overpower, as John said. The true light is coming into the world. And no other light is really important beside him. If we have him, then we don't walk in the dark ever. But it is to the people who have walked in the darkness that the light comes. And that brings me back to that image of letting the world in. I've met some people, often very uneasy people, into whose life darkness has made no inroads. Nice people, good people, nice houses, nice families, but no real problems, all doing well, but uneasy, because they know that just beyond the garden gate there is all this sorrow. And I don't think really that there is a happy life, a contented life, which can steer through these icebergs and come out at the other end what it should be. Because I think those who have balance and security and confidence and understanding and generosity to live together happily, they owe the world. They're in debt. Because they possess gifts for which the world is starving today. And I think that all of us have a duty to walk in the darkness with those who are benighted, and to let that grief of the world into our lives. Not to punish ourselves for being happy or to make ourselves miserable, but because it is the way of Christ, who came from highest bliss down to such a world as this, in order to let the grief in that he alone will carry for us. And that light, our gift to the world, we must carry into the dark, as Jesus does. He has made their gladness greater. He has made our joy increase. Let us proclaim our faith in Jesus.